Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music.
From Sergio Assad's concerto, Interchange, there's Foro Blues Detour, the Delaware Symphony Orchestra led by David Amato, with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet performing.
We're delighted to welcome today on Crossover Maestro David Amato.
Hi, Jill.
It's wonderful to see you again. We have been certainly aware of what's been going on with the Delaware Symphony, and of course you have been here now for quite a few years. How many seasons have you been?
This is my ninth season.
Is that already?
That's amazing, huh?
And yeah, it's amazing, and it's really quite obvious because the symphony has evolved into something that is certainly worth listening to on a different level, rather than a kind of a collection of freelancers who played a regular season. You have a real orchestra there.
Thank you.
Something to be reckoned with. I know I was extremely impressed by an album that you had released. I guess it was last year, was it?
It was a couple years ago now, Interchange, with that album we did with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
Yes, fabulous.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun. I think that one of the things that I really enjoyed about that project was that I felt like the idea for the album was born of nothing but the desire for musicians that liked each other to make music together that they liked and put it on a CD. I mean, there was no kind of politicking. There was no nothing. It was just a bunch of people.
Let's play this.
Right.
We like it. Yeah. We just heard the first movement of Interchange, a work by Sergio Assad, performed by the Delaware Symphony Orchestra with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, conducted by Maestro David Amato. You have quite a background. You are a graduate of the Juilliard, and your family is rather renowned.
Yeah, I suppose so. I didn't have a choice, now that I look back on it, about what I was going to do with my life.
Really?
Well, you know, my mom's family, they were all professional musicians.
Yes, the Fuchs, the great...
Yeah, and my grandmother was taught at Juilliard in Manhattan, and she was a violist, and my great-uncle, and my mother was a violinist, and my aunt's a cellist, and my dad was a theoretical nuclear physicist.
Well, that
so, you
helps.
Know, given the choice, you know, I went into music. I wasn't going to be a physicist.
You weren't even going to try for
that one.
For the audience who is not aware of your background, you were with the St. Louis Symphony, certainly.
For a bunch of years.
Yes. And then the Oregon Symphony with Oregon.
The Oregon Symphony. I was there for a year. I was an apprentice conductor there. It was a wonderful opportunity for me. It was my first job right out of school. And there weren't a lot of responsibilities, conducting responsibilities with that job. But what was great about it was that it allowed me to see firsthand what a professional orchestra schedule was like, because when you're in school,
right,
the schedule's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You spend weeks and weeks and weeks on 15 minutes of music.
Exactly.
You get into the professional world and it's a program a week. And it was really, it felt like going from driving on the shoulder in a tractor to, you know, driving in the fast lane in a sports car. You know, there's a real transition there, a mental transition. You have to learn quickly. You have to be prepared. You have to have tools in your toolkit that help you process music and digest it very, very fast.
But so, you actually started on a very high level. I mean, they just dropped you into the ocean and there you were.
Right.
I mean, these were not minor orchestras that you were conducting.
Well, I had great training. You know, Juilliard was a wonderful opportunity and wonderful experience for me. And Mr. Mueller, my teacher, gave me exactly the tools that I needed to adapt to that kind of change of pace. And I was glad I had that year buffer in Oregon before I went to St. Louis, where I had more conducting responsibilities.
Did you ever play an instrument?
I was a pianist.
You were a pianist to begin with.
I was.
How did you just start to get into conducting? I've always wondered about that, aside from the fact that I think it's a very big responsibility as opposed to being an instrumentalist, which is a huge one, but it's for yourself.
Right. I think it was a confluence of a few things. And first of all, I also played trumpet, not very well, but I did play in youth orchestra. And so it was a really kind of wonderful social experience for me, something that as a pianist, you generally don't have.
Right.
Because being a pianist, you're generally by yourself. And I mean, the other thing that got me into conducting was a girl. And
That'll do it, I think.
my now wife of 15, 16 years, was a violinist at Juilliard, and she played in the conductor's orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to go see what she was interested in, and I would sit in and watch these lessons. I was an undergrad and a pianist, and it was really eye-opening to see this combination of social dynamic and musical insight kind of unfold in a way that I had never understood or really knew even that was there.
But as you say, I mean, piano is a very individual kind of world. Any instrument that you play that is an orchestral instrument gives you that understanding of what it is to be part of a larger group.
Right.
And it's very different. So it's kind of being a soloist, and all of a sudden here you have all of these people that you have to get together and make music with.
Well, on the other side of that, though, is the fact that the piano is really the only instrument that is capable of
doing everything.
Right. And so being in control of what you're in control of at the keyboard isn't that far from being in control of all of these instrumentalists. I mean, the whole social thing is very different, obviously.
But it's also an ensemble, you know, working as opposed to solo.
Right.
You know, it's a very, very different. So, but it's very good. I mean, many conductors have you ever decided to or thought of playing as a soloist with your orchestra?
I would never inflict that on the audience.
Okay.
I have conducted from the keyboard.
Yes.
You know, from harpsichord and stuff, doing some early classical repertoire. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of fun because you don't really hear the harpsichord, you know?
Yeah,
it's a kind of texture and...
Well, it's the harmonies, then,
right.
I guess.
So it's not, I'm not in the limelight as a keyboardist for
that. Or you're not responsible for any errors either. So, but what drew you to the Delaware Symphony, aside from the fact that they went after you?
I had been in St. Louis for a bunch of years as associate conductor, and it got to a point there where I really came to realize that I needed to have full control over sort of artistic destiny, that being the staff guy, as wonderful as that was and as fantastic as that orchestra is and as mm-hmm. wonderful as the people in it are, I was still not making the decisions and I wanted that opportunity. And the Delaware Symphony posted an ad for music director and I thought, well, I'm from Philly. It's just down the street. It seems like a could be a really wonderful match. And I mean, I had no idea what I was doing.
But it was a very different, I mean, you were going into a minor orchestra, certainly. I mean, they were certainly devoted
performers, but it was, you know, and it was well supported, I think, by, you know, local patrons who were interested in keeping an orchestra going, because in many cases, the orchestra is the social event of the season. I mean, a lot of, of the smaller orchestras, the regional orchestras, not only the regional ones, but of course the very big ones. I mean, the social season was built around that, that the concert season. So, but Delaware definitely was, I guess, a challenge for you on several levels.
Well, I mean, what I saw when I auditioned and then when I first arrived, what I saw was an opportunity to allow people to reach their potential. And I think that in some respects, look, you can look at orchestras sort of empirically and say, well, here's the St. Louis Symphony. They play almost year round. They're of a certain caliber, a certain level. The Philadelphia Orchestra, 52-week orchestra of a certain level. You have the Delaware Symphony, they don't play nearly as much. They're not a full-time orchestra. And they necessarily then will play at a different level. And you can make career choices based on those levels. And that's certainly valid. But I think for me, a far more interesting and satisfying way to look at the orchestra world is to say, where is it possible to make the biggest difference? Where can I find a community where I can step in and say, hey, let me show you what this music is about. Let me make this music a part of your life. And say to the musicians, here, I know there's potential there. Let's reach that potential. I think that
it's a challenge.
It's not only a challenge, but I think that people, this idea of growth, yes, I think, is ultimately more important than the value at a specific point,
mm-hmm,
right? So I think, of course, it's wonderful to have an orchestra that plays incredibly well, but I think it's also wonderful to have an orchestra that's constantly growing. And I've been very satisfied and fortunate with the Delaware Symphony that I have that sense that there's this continual, steady and I think very satisfying musical growth.
Well, I think it's very, very evident and exciting to watch. You did stumble a little bit on some problems most recently. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Well, what's to tell? I think we had a confluence of like so many places. We had this terrible economy hit us, and we had some decisions made that were that I think seemed to many, especially on the outside, severe and draconian. We ended up canceling our season,
it was really a shock.
It was a shock to a lot of people, but I think that fortunately we've regrouped and we're planning on doing 6 concerts this winter and spring, to 3 concerts twice each, and that's a wonderful step forward for us, and we're looking forward to seeing each other again and making some music.
When is the first concert?
The first concert is on Friday, the 25th of January, at 7:30 in the evening. You know, I think one of the things that's been a sort of upside of all of this is that the situation has allowed us to rethink a lot of the sort of basic things that we had taken for granted in the past.
Well,
for example, you know, we're doing this Friday night concert, and we're not doing it at 8. We're doing it at 7:30. That's a small thing, but it's
Did you decide that?
We just feel like maybe an earlier evening is just simply easier for people. And then we're doing Sunday afternoons, so we don't have a Saturday night concert. We're doing
Sunday
afternoon concert.
Well, that's quite lovely, Sunday afternoons, I think.
So, too. Yeah. And I always enjoyed going to Sunday afternoon performances, and I think that our audience will enjoy it as well. They're early, they're at 2, so people can still have their Sunday evening plans intact. I'm looking forward to seeing how those things work. And that's the sort of thing that's difficult to change if you are in this rhythm of doing Friday
and Saturday
nights.
Well, it's a habit all over the world. I don't even think it's local. It's just, you know, you go to evening concerts at 8 if you're in Paris, or if you're in Philadelphia, or if you're in, you know, Mongolia. I think it's the same thing. But I think it requires courage. And I also think that you are in a position where you really can define yourself as an orchestra by the newness of what you do.
Right.
I mean, I think it's great. I think it's exciting.
Thank you. And I think one of the other things that we're doing that I think is very exciting is we're playing our first concert at the Grand. the Friday and Sunday at the Grand. But the remaining two sets of concerts were not playing at the Grand. We're playing at the Laird Performing Arts Center at the Tatnall School in Greenville. A really very beautiful performing arts center.
Yeah, sure.
And we're hoping that that will be a success also, obviously, and open up some new avenues for us. Go to different parts of this. We are the Delaware Symphony, after all. Right, so it's in our name to pursue the state.
Well, it's a new incarnation, let's put it that way. I think you've kind of come in with a breath of fresh air, and you certainly have some marvelous instrumentalists that are playing with you, and you yourself have I think an agenda of also some other large orchestral concerts that you're going to be conducting. Is that right?
Delaware? These three concerts are each going to feature a soloist from the Delaware Symphony. Laura Johnson, our pianist, is fantastic, is going to play on the first concert, Rachmaninoff First Piano Concerto. And I guess I can tell this story, but we had auditions for orchestral pianist, right? And they're behind a screen, like all the auditions are. And we heard lots of excellent pianists playing lots of wonderful repertoire, Schumann Concerto and Beethoven Concerto, and then just contestant number, whatever it is.
Sure.
Walks out on stage, and we don't see anything, and we know it's going to be the Rachmaninoff First Concerto, and this person begins. And it was so stellar that we all looked at each other, and we thought, do we have to stop her? Can't we just let her play the whole piece? I mean, it was so, so wonderful.
Wonderful.
And so I'm really thrilled to be able to have the opportunity to not have to stop her. You know, she's going to get to play the whole piece, so... So Laura's going to join us for those January concerts. And then we've got concerts in March, 22 and 24, also Friday and Sunday. And Kim Raley, a wonderful principal flutist, is going to play the Eber Concerto together with the Siegfried E. Diehl of Wagner and the Beethoven 7th Symphony. And then in April, we've got two concerts, the 12th and the 14th. And for that, Sarah Fuller is going to be playing Debussy with us. She's our harpist, and she's also absolutely wonderful. And I mean, it's such a great opportunity for us to be able to focus on the talent that makes up the Delaware Symphony.
Well, I could certainly speak to Sarah Fuller. I mean, she is a wonderful harpist. I was quite surprised to find out that she was playing with you as the harp chair, but not only as the soloist. So
yeah, it's going to be great. And we're doing Chaik 5 on that same concert. And Haydn 93, which is one of my favorite Haydn symphonies. So
now and he's smiling, audience. I mean, when he says Haydn, you know.
How can you not smile? He had such a great sense of humor.
Ad infinitum, you know, Haydn symphonies. But sure, certainly, you know, that's really going to be very lovely.
That's the Haydn symphony with this lovely slow movement that kind of almost grinds to a halt toward the end. And then is interrupted by this incredibly loud, low bassoon note.
That's what you were. That's what you liked about it.
It's a wonderful, great, and vulgar moment.
We listen now to the Concerto for Four Guitars by Joaquin Rodrigo. The Concierto Andaluz, featuring the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet as soloists with the Delaware Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Maestro Amato. Music from the premiere recording of the Delaware Symphony Orchestra conducted by Maestro David Amato. We heard the Concierto Andaluz featuring the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet in music of Joaquin Rodrigo. Once again, the Delaware Symphony Orchestra was conducted by Maestro Amato. So for anyone who was aware of the fact that there was a hiatus with the Delaware Symphony, everything is resolved and you're in full swing again?
I would not say it's quite full swing. I would say it's more like a very successful bunt. You know, I think there are still many questions that need to be answered, and we're in the process of answering them. There are many questions still unasked that need to be asked, and so we're in the process of discovering what those questions are. But I think as we move forward, I think we're now in a position to move forward, and I think that that's an important distinction from where we were, because where we were did not allow us that forward motion. But now with these concerts scheduled, I think we're pointed in the right direction, and we have some momentum. And once you've overcome that initial, coefficient of friction, once you start from zero and move a little bit, I think the incremental steps become easier.
Well, maybe you're creating a boilerplate for some of the larger symphonies that are going through all kinds of trouble throughout the country.
What a year.
I don't know about the world, but certainly in the country, the major, major symphonies that you would think wouldn't even have to blink are really suffering, as everyone is aware of.
And it's tragic.
We're trying to find why. Is it always money? Does it all boil down to that?
In some respects, I think. Okay, it boils down to money. I think if people had lots and lots of money, it wouldn't be an issue. But I think that the fundamental problem is bigger than that. I think the fundamental problem has to do with the way that what we do as musicians kind of interfaces or does not interface with kind of the general culture. And what I mean is that a lot of orchestras, the Delaware Symphony included, talks a lot about education and exposure. And of course, it's extremely important. And music, we find music less and less in the schools, and people are less and less familiar with the language of what it is that we do. And I'm all for exposure, and I'm all for education, of course. But I think that the problem even goes beyond that, because I think a culture that is fundamentally unreceptive to what we do won't be able to support even the education after that education has been kind of released into that environment. I mean, what I mean is that I feel like what we're up against a little bit is trying to plant tropical plants in an Arctic environment. And no amount of caring for those plants while you still have them is going to ensure their survival in the wrong kind of environment, in the wrong kind of soil. So we need to amend that soil.
There were years, many, many years, uneducated people, and I don't say that in a condescending way, loved to go to orchestral concerts. There wasn't even a question of learning it in the schools. And I guess it's the story of art in general, the arts. But why are the orchestras so impacted by this? I think there are performing arts companies that are having a problem, but they go on and on, and no one begins to theorize about why. So what is it? Is it classical music? Why do people want more, pop concerts and things like that? Why is it the fault of the music? It really isn't.
It's not the fault of the music. I just think there's a huge amount of overhead in what we do. It's a very expensive pursuit. And I think that in some respects, the culture, the general direction of the culture is not one which seems to be particularly aligned with the values put forth by the music that we play.
You think it's all over the world this way?
I can't speak to that.
Because you hear of certain problems, but again, it's always money. But
yeah.
I just wondered about that, because it is suddenly, it's this thing that happened, and it's a very, very serious problem. And of course, it impacts on society and education for people, not necessarily in the schools. So there are a lot of people that used to go to concerts that didn't know the first thing about music.
And they don't need to know the first thing about music.
And that's
why I think, although education and exposure is important, that's not the real issue. The real issue is understanding how to amend the culture in a way that allows it to be fundamentally receptive, education or not, to what it is that we do.
Or to be included as something important.
Right.
I think. Well, you're certainly changing the landscape of things in our area, and I really commend you for that. It's a delight to speak with you, Maestro David, and we look forward to a wonderful season with the Delaware Symphony. If one wants tickets, how does one do that?
One can call the Grand Box Office, which is area code 302-652-5577.
And that's the box office.
That's the box office, correct.
Do you have a season ticket, or is it just separate concerts?
Right now, we're selling subscriptions.
Right.
And individual tickets will go on sale shortly.
Well, a pleasure speaking with you, and I look forward to coming to your concerts as well, and just watching the Delaware Symphony expand. It's going to be really quite exciting.
Thank you, Jill.
You've really done a terrific job. And thanks so much for joining us on Crossover.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jill.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.